You've found the Diggin' Oak Island podcast. Podcasters journey to discover the truth behind the Oak Island mystery. I'm David Bryant. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. If you listen to or subscribe to the show on iTunes or really any other app or any other platform you use, I ask you please leave us a 5-star rating there if you can, and also subscribe to us. I'd also like to invite you to join the show on Twitter and Facebook. You can follow us at Diggin' Oak Island. As I'm sure all you Curse of Oak Island fanatics know by now, there was no episode this week, no new episode of the show, as the History Channel presented a really cool three-day, three-part documentary on the life and career of George Washington in honor of President's Day. It was a really good show if you got a chance to watch it. So we don't have new television content to discuss today, but I thought what I would do is kind of open it up to some listener questions. So I put a call out on Facebook and on Twitter. Join us there at Diggin' Oak Island. I put a call out for some listeners to ask some questions so we can have some topics to discuss. And as is typical of the incredible group of listeners that I have here on this podcast, they came back with a handful of some great, great questions. And we're going to talk about them and answer them today as best I possibly can. Now, let me give you a little inside baseball here. Usually how this show works is I take a day or so to write a script, to author a script, and then I read off that script. So a lot of times what you're hearing is just me reading through a script. Makes it nice and slick, keeps out the ums and the ahs and all that kind of stuff. But today, I'm going to go live. Well, live to tape, so to speak. I'm just going to answer these as they come because I really don't I kind of want to have a nice live feel to this and kind of give you the answers, you know, my gut responses to some of these questions, as they really are great questions. I took some notes down for them, and I have them all here. So let's get started. First, let's go to Drew on Twitter. He writes about last week we had a listener who wrote us, and in part of their email to us included a picture from when they were on what's called the Salty Dog Tours, which is a tour run by, you see, diver Tony Sampson. He actually runs these tours that go around Oak Island, and you get to see, it's kind of a guided tour of Oak Island from the ocean. And he took a picture. This was, I think he said, the week or maybe the weekend after Hurricane Dorian came through, which we've seen a lot about in the Curse of Oak Island the last couple days. And he posted a picture. You can still see it on the Twitter and Facebook pages of the cofferdam coming down. So his question, kind of really following up to that, was permitting the reason why it had to come down? Permitting, you know, like they have to get permits to do any such thing from the government in order to, I mean, especially in order to build something as environmentally impactful as the cofferdam can be. So the question is, was the permit the issue and why it had to come down? You know, permits are an issue for these type of things all the time. And quite frankly, if I'm 100% honest, I'm surprised that it was up as long as it was, because if we are to believe the show, that cofferdam was up probably more than a year, and that seems like a long time for something like that. So I am surprised it was up that long. Its timing is weird. If the cofferdam is coming down in September, that means that all the work we're seeing in Smith's Cove, and we talked about this in relationship to the question was in relationship to whether or not we're really seeing sort of a chronological presentation of the season's work. This incident, this cofferdam photo really shows us that we're probably not, because it means that all of that work, everything we're seeing, all had to be done before the beginning of September, and their season goes on really until November. So I would imagine that they wrapped up all work on Smith's Cove quite earlier than some of the other projects that we're seeing, even though it looks like they're kind of going hand in hand. I'm sure this is going to be explained, especially if it's a permitting issue. They tend to really talk about that a lot. You know, they didn't give us any silly canned response to the reason why work stopped during a strike. We've had other permitting issues that they've brought up. So I would imagine we are going to see this. And like I said, we really get an idea that this was done just really in the summers. So that kind of gives you an idea of how this show is all working out. But as we were saying, the cofferdam did come down. So my assumption is that the end of this season is going to probably wrap up work in Smith's Cove for at least a good maybe season or two. If this show continues to a season 8 and 9 and beyond, there's a lot of talk, as there is every year, as to whether or not there is going to be a season 8 or 9. There's no way for me to know. They haven't announced anything yet, and they won't probably until after this season is over. David on Twitter asks, "Hi, Dave. Great podcast. Thank you. Nice name, Dave. Do you actually think we will see the guys start digging the money pit this season, or do you think it'll be a cliffhanger for next season?" I already wrote to you or already said a couple minutes ago that you never know from season to season. I think every year this is such an expensive dig, and it costs so much of the lives and probably the businesses of everybody involved here. I know it's been a good thing for them financially. I'm sure it has. But, you know, you only want to do these kind of things for so many years, and it's been quite a few years already. So we never know. My thought is you need to keep in mind that we're only on episode 13. Last season we had 22 episodes, and I believe we might have even more than that. The final episode last year didn't air until the end of April. So we have quite a bit of time to go here. And it really does feel like we're going to get some money pit dig happening. And I think we're going to get a lot of it. Now, how will it end? My guess, your guess is as good as mine. I have no idea. But I don't think that we're just going to poke around the money pit and then end the season with a cliffhanger of, oh my God, we found it. Let's dig it next year. No, I think we're going to dig this year and we're going to get an idea of what we might be looking at. It's just a matter of whether or not, how do I say this artfully, whether or not the money pit really is the thing we're talking about the most at the end of the season. Last year, if you remember, we were talking about the swamp the most at the end of the season. What will we be talking about this year? I'm not sure it's going to be the money pit. I'll mention that more in just a second. Now we go to Facebook. Jeff on Facebook writes, "Great podcast. Thank you, sir. Been following along for several months. You have added a lot of info that doesn't usually get mentioned. Thank you again for that. Good research. Thank you again. When do you think the Money Pit location was actually last known with 100% certainty? The guys have been using shafts 9 and 2 to find it. I thought they could use the head and shaft, but when I went back to interviews with him, it seems by the 1930s, the Money Pit was already lost." Jeff, this is a great question, and it's something that kind of gets sort of waved at a little bit on the show. Money Pit's been lost for a century or more. And the reason why they say it like that is because nobody really knows for sure. Now, the best guess that I would say is that the Money Pit location was probably lost somewhere in between the work of the Oak Island, I think the El Dorado Company, and that was in the 1860s. And by the time Frederick Blair and his, I think they were called the Oak Island Treasure Company, came to the island in the 1890s. In that 30-year period, by this point, you have most of the people who, well, you have all three of the guys who discovered the Money Pit no longer alive. You have only descendants there. You don't have anybody working on the island in that 30-year period that worked with those three. I am not aware of any way they mark the money pit. So I believe that's probably the time. And I think that's the time frame most people are guessing. By the time Frederick Blair got on the island, they really were just kind of guessing. But the problem is that might not be the only time frame when it was lost. Keep in mind, the Truro Company came on the island in the 1850s. The Onslow Company, the first company to really go down that involved all three of the original finders of the Money Pit, they did it, their work in the early, like 1804, 1803 to 1805. That's a 40-plus year period in there. Now, did John Smith place a giant flag into the ground at the Money Pit and make sure it stayed there and never moved around for 45 years? Not likely. Not likely. So when they came back to start digging in the money pit, were they really digging down in the money pit, or were they digging down at their best guess? Now, it's the best guess of the person who originally dug it. I understand that. But that's 45 years ago. Folks, I can't remember details of, I can't remember the name of my teacher 45 years ago. I can't remember a lot of things from 45 years ago. Could I tell you exactly where something was without a marker on the ground? Probably not. I can give you a good idea, but who knows? So it could easily have been lost there too. So all of the stuff that took place in, you know, from the 1850 until 1865, and there's a bunch of stuff that happened in there. They found some things, there's some compelling evidence, but they might not have been looking directly in the shaft that we called the money pit. We don't know that for sure. So it really is a question. And it's the reason why they're very sort of non-specific about it. It really is a good question as to when it was lost and how long it's been lost. And whether or not things like the head and shaft or even shaft 9 could really give them an idea of where it is. That's what makes shaft 2 so important. Shaft 2 goes back a very, very long way, goes back to the Onslow Company. So that is if they can find that and they think they've got something there, then they know that, you know, then they have some information on a shaft that they know was dug when the money pit was in front of them. If that makes any sense. Again, my guess is it was sometime, you know, after the 1860s, but it could have been any time. What we know now from the carbon dating is that the wood taken out recently does seem to indicate some pretty old stuff. So we might be onto something here. We might actually be getting close. But who knows? Who knows what kind of condition the money pit's in? There's just no way to really know. Claire on Facebook writes, thank you for the question, Jeff. It's a great one. Claire on Facebook writes, saw somewhere people saying the stuff found in Smith's Cove was the Hedden Pier, something never mentioned on the show. Do you know anything about this? So P.S. Love the show. Thank you, Claire. Also, another person, Hayden, writes a very similar question. They wrote, found an old photo today which shows a pier in Smith's Cove. I've never heard it mentioned on the show before. Was just wondering if it's something I've missed. Have you heard of it? Yeah, we've heard of it for sure. Gilbert Hedden, and I don't think he's the only one, built a pier in Smith's Cove. Smith's Cove is very close to the money pit, makes all the sense in the world. It's somewhat protected, makes all the sense in the world that if you're going to bring barges in or something like that, you would go to Smith's Cove. I see no reason why that wouldn't be the case. You also have to understand the causeway wasn't built until the latter half of the 20th century. So everybody before that needed to put all the materials and everything they wanted to do on a boat and sail it across the little channel there to Oak Island and to the opposite side of Oak Island. So what we have here is, you know, we shouldn't be surprised that something was there. Now, should the team be mentioning this on the show? 100% absolutely they should. There are bunch of photos out there of the Hedden Pier. There's a lot of information. There's some stuff that he even said about how he felt he might have been digging this. I believe it was him who wrote we might have been building this pier on top of something pre-existing. So he knew that something might have been down there, but didn't have the wherewithal or the resources to dam the whole thing up. You know, the problem is, if we're trying to say that what we're looking at is the Hedden Pier, well, the dendrochronology stuff just doesn't add up because this is wood from the 1740s, and he's not going to have wood from the 1740s to build his pier. Also, if you look at the pier, it's very different from the slipway. Could they be related in some way? Could we be seeing bits of each? Yeah, we could. But the fact that we're seeing wood dated from the time frame that they're dating it from and the dendrochronology stuff is really, really accurate and really, really good. It really does throw a lot of shade on this idea that maybe all we're looking at is just the Hedden Pier. I don't think that's the case. I don't see how that all squares away. The dating information, it just doesn't add up. Eric on Facebook writes us and says, I know there was a special on the Nolan Blankenship feud. Did you ever do a podcast? Well, not really a podcast, Eric. Certainly not a show dedicated only to the feud. If we go back to this season, episode 10, end of January, They did a Digging Deeper special, one of those pregame shows, and it was called The Great Feud, where they talked about, they did a whole show that talked about really this feud between Dan Blankenship and Fred Nolan. I discussed a lot of it there. I'd invite you to go back and take a listen to that show. There's a lot of, there's a good half of it, probably half of that podcast dedicated to the show. It is the podcast for episode 10, Gary Strikes Again. And it's just part of it. That special was on just before. It was a really good special. It focused a lot on the Laginas' involvement in this and sort of the future of it and all those very appropriate things. Listen, the Nolan and Blankenship feud is fascinating. And it is integral into the modern history of Oak Island, for sure. But a lot of it was legal. There was lawsuits back and forth between the two of them, and a lot of it kind of was focused around a lot of legal things, bad words. I mean, this, despite what you might think, this was not the Hatfields and the McCoys. Fred and Dan did not come out into the middle of the street, with tumbleweeds floating, tumbleweeds rolling by with six shooters on their hips. This was not High Noon. This was a partnership that had a lot of mistrust, a lot of bad decisions, if I'm honest, between the both of them. Fred pushed a lot of this with just basically sort of backdooring his way onto the island by buying up lots that the current owner, the person who Dan Blankenship worked for, felt that he owned. And Dan found sort of a loophole, for lack of a better term, and bought these lots out from under him and then basically tried to, blackmail is a hard word, but basically tried to coerce him to allowing him to do some work on the island in exchange for these lots. So, it's the relationship started off poorly. Dan and Fred tried to block each other's work by blocking access to roads to their properties. But then there was sort of a detente, and then it blew up again. Obviously, everybody knows about the popular Mounties thing, where the Mounties had to come, Canadian Mounted Police had to come and wrestle the gun out of Dan Blankenship's hand. All of that stuff is in there. Really, when it gets down to it, the thrust of it all had to do with a legal battle over these lots and whether or not Fred was really legally on the island and whether or not, therefore, he had a right to be searching on the island. That is, that lawsuit is just one day, perhaps I will dedicate a show more to that to give you more of the details behind what that important thing really was, so you get a better idea of why Fred and Dan really were at each other's throats for so many years. It actually predates Dan. Dan kind of came in, like I said, to another owner who Fred was already warring with. So there's a lot of misinformation, a lot of finger pointing and name calling. Fred might not have been as upfront about things as you would like to think he was. There was a lot of stuff to this, and it really is important. I did go through a lot of it in that show, so I do ask you to go back and take a look at that. It's something maybe we'll get to in the future. I haven't done a show just on it. There's a lot of legalese in all this, so I don't know how much of an exciting show it'll be, but we'll look into it, as time goes on, for sure. Daniel writes, what is your guess as to what they hauled out of that huge hole that looked like a huge pump? What he's referring to, and I checked with him to make sure I had this right, what he's referring to is a quick shot you see in the preseason trailer. Now, it's kind of hard to find that preseason trailer, so what I'll do is I screenshotted this one picture that I'm talking about so you can see this object that they're pulling up, and then you can have a real kind of good look at it, and I'll put this picture on Facebook and on Twitter. I was really hoping by now that we would have a good idea of what this is. This could be the cliffhanger. I don't know for sure, but it does look that way. Now, there's a couple things where you can glean from this screenshot and from a couple of the shots that are there. Number one, they're digging a huge hole, and they're digging it with an excavator that has an incredible reach. And if you go back to when they hired this company to bring in this swamp excavator they're using now, one of the things they said was that it had this like 70-foot reach, much further reach to dig than anything else that they had on the island and really been any other excavator. So they were really impressed by it. So my thought is maybe that's it. So could this be a digging project going on in the swamp? Might be. Maybe they just moved that excavator over to someplace else. I thought for a while we might have been looking at the cave-in pit here, but we haven't seen whatever this is that's coming out. If I were to render a guess, I would think this would either be in the swamp because of the equipment used, but if I'm looking at the picture, maybe this is the money pit area. And then what we're looking at here is probably going to be searcher-related. As much as I would like to think that it's not, just from the quick thing you have there, quick glance you have there, it seems to be searcher related. Listen, everybody, all of you listening to the show out there, go to the Facebook page, go to the Twitter page, take a look at this thing if you haven't seen it already, and let's have your ideas. Tell me what you think it is, because it's just a fleeting shot. It looks mechanical to me, but give me an idea of what exactly it is you think we're looking at here, because it is fascinating. Can't wait for that. Thank you very much for that question, Daniel. Now, let's move on to a couple of emails here. Andrew emailed us and asked, sorry if this question has been already addressed on a previous show. I bet you've gotten this one multiple times, in fact. My question is, considering there is something like, I'm guessing, a 4.5-month gap between when the shows are filmed, when they are aired, do you think if they were to already have found the treasure during the filming of the 7th season, we would have already heard about it in the news media? Do you think they would really have been able to keep the secret from the public until it was revealed to everyone for the first time in the Curse of Oak Island television show? Well, this is a question that does get asked a lot, and maybe not to me as much, but I see it on social media all the time. People on social media tend to be I shouldn't say people. There's a lot of folks on the social media pages, and there's a million Oak Island pages out there. They're all great, great fans of the show. Incredible information on there. I do invite you to go and check all of them out. They're fantastic. There's certainly a sect of people, a group of people on there who are constantly thinking some sort of conspiracy angle to deal with the show, the History Channel, Prometheus, the production company, and all this kind of stuff, thinking that they're hiding things from us. So like I said, it gets a lot asked a lot, and people on social media are very sure that this is exactly what's going on. I'm not so sure. First, this assumes a lot of things. It assumes, for one, that there is, in fact, a treasure chest or a treasure vault. You know, that there is, in fact, an Indiana Jones-style cave somewhere under there where when they open it up, the Ark of the Covenant will gleam into the cameras and all that kind of stuff. You know, that, or maybe there's a big chest, Captain Kidd's treasure chest that's been undisturbed and it's just waiting there to be found. You know, if there is a treasure, if this was, all of this was done for a treasure, the chances are, if you go back and look at all the work done over the years and over the decades and centuries, all of the blasting and digging and flooding and all of the excavators and all of the bulldozers and all the stuff that's been in there, chances are whatever was originally built has been severely compromised, either destroyed or also perhaps dispersed throughout all of these areas. We talked last time about Shaft 2, and we've been talking about this a lot. So what Shaft 2 was the money pit was filled with water, and this happened a lot. What a lot of searchers tried to do was dig a hole next to the money pit and then tunnel sideways into it. Now, what they always tried to do was tunnel to the point where they thought the treasure was, because they had found, wood or something in at a certain depth. So they're trying to trying to tunnel either underneath it and come up to it or next to it or what have you. And every time, inevitably, water burst in and filled up this new shaft. Then we had all of this work in the money pit, which was all this wood so people can climb in and out and so they can put things up and down it. And that all collapsed. All fell, tons of wood fell down, and a giant crash was heard. Most likely, whatever was there was probably, like I said, completely compromised, and then maybe spread out throughout all of these places and all of these different tunnels and at the bottom of all these different pits, to the point where if you look at 10X, where Dan Blankenship thought he found something, that's not near the money pit at all. That, I mean, it's near the money pit, but it's not like 10 feet away. It's yards and yards away. Go have a look at a map and you'll see what I mean. This could be anywhere at this point. It's impossible to say. So my point is, I don't think even the best case scenario is that the shovel hits wood and lo and behold, there's a treasure chest. I don't think that's ever going to happen. I think at the very best, if there was a treasure chest, you might start to find, and they have found, hinges, pieces of wood, things like that, of what once was the treasure chest. But more to the point of the question at hand, I would say yes, they can hold it and keep it secret for a few months. You have to understand the isolation of Oak Island, okay? It's not like there's news cameras there all the time keeping an eye on them. They have it cleared off. They bring on people who they want to bring on. They know exactly the tours are taking people to certain areas. That's certainly not an issue with all these tours and people on the island. It's not an issue to hold things from them. You can certainly do that pretty easily so that people on the island don't see it. There's a lot of drone flyovers, but who knows what they're going to see. Again, a drone's only going to spot something that's big. Who knows what they bring out. There's also all these non-disclosure agreements that bring the threat of legal action. But having said all that, everyone I've ever talked to who's been on the show, involved in the show in some way, they all are on board for this. Not just the hunt and the search, but the presentation of the hunt and the search to the general public. They really are. They're on board for all this. So I don't see anybody coming on the island here and giving it away, and disclosing all this. There's no reason to do that. So the only real issue is the government, because as we've explained in the past, there is an agreement, a treasure license from the government, and stuff found has to go through Laird Niven, the archaeologist, and then be disclosed to the government. There's a percentage they get to keep if there's monetary value and all that kind of stuff. If they find something of incredible wealth, if the Ark of the Covenant comes up, I cannot see, unless there is a time frame with which they can hold it before presenting it to the government, I can't see, or if they may have some agreement with the Canadian government, we don't know that. I can't see how that would be kept quiet. So I think if what you're talking about here, Andrew, is finding the Ark of the Covenant, or finding a giant chest of, Captain Kidd's gold, if it's something like that you're thinking of, I don't think they're going to be able to find that. I don't think they're going to be able to hold that. I think reporting that's dicey. I think getting the government involved would be dicey. My point is, I just don't think there's anything like that to be found. I think what we're going to find is something, along the lines of an incredibly crazy medieval lead cross found a couple of years ago. I mean, we didn't hear about that in the news before it came out. And it's an incredibly valuable piece. It's historically amazing. And yet they were able to hold it. My guess is if they do find the treasure in quotes and, in air quotes, it's going to be piece by piece. It's going to be a little bit here, a little bit there. maybe we don't really know what it is. It has to be tested, yada, yada, yada. And by the time that's all done, then it's not really too much of a stretch to see how it might be held for the few months before the show begins to air. The longer the show goes, the more episodes, the harder that becomes. But I you know, I think I've rambled a lot about this because we get this question a lot. Yes, they. My point is, yes, they can keep it secret. They have non-disclosure agreements. I don't see the Laginas doing anything. But if we're talking about something of incredible size and incredible historic value that needs to be sort of taken by the government, then it might get a little dicey. I just don't see how that's ever going to happen. Now, what I want to do here, we only got a couple questions left, but I just want to take a short break, catch my breath a little bit, and we'll come back on the other side and answer the rest. All right, so we only have a couple of questions left to go through here, but this one's a two-parter, and then we have one that's sort of related. I got another email. The last email before the break was from a listener named Andrew. This is another one from Andrew. Could be the same Andrew, different email address, but either way, if it's the same guy, thank you for both questions. If not, thank you, Andrew, and thank you, Andrew. He's got two questions. One, love the podcast. Have you read the attached book? And if so, what are your thoughts? If you haven't, it basically posits that no treasure is there, and the island was just a locale for ship repairs and pitch production. Love to know your thoughts on this. Okay, so the attached book is called The Oak Island Mystery Solved. It's by a writer and researcher from Nova Scotia named Joy Steele. Long and short, no, I have not read the book. It's certainly on my list, my reading list for the future. I am aware, however, of her research. I've heard her and read a few articles about it. I've not gone through the whole book, but I pretty much know where she's coming from with this. She has another book, or maybe an update to this one, coming out soon. I think coming out in March of this year. So you certainly can, you know, wait on that and see what she says. I'm always skeptical when anyone has such hubris as to call their book The Oak Island Mystery Solved. I mean, Joy Steele has an incredible amount of research in what she's doing. She's got the receipts for a lot of things that she's saying, you know, and she brings in a lot of different sources, and she goes through a lot of different ideas and seems to have a lot of sourcing for this, and it seems well-researched. But solved? That always turns me off a little bit. But anyway, I don't want to give away her book. I have no reason to do that. Read it on your own. And like I said, I haven't read it yet. I can only tell you what her theory is that she espouses on radio broadcasts and in articles and things like that. It's basically, her theory is that there is no treasure, that nothing built here on the island was built for the purposes of a treasure. Basically, what the treasure is kind of a lost history of this area of Mahone Bay. You know, that we no longer know what was actually done, but at, you know, 300 years ago, it was well known. The conclusion she comes to is this was all done. Everything on Oak Island, all these pits were dug, and I guess just the money pit was dug for what's called naval stores. It's basically the old anti-fouling. So now, right, boats are painted on the bottom. If you're not familiar with the marine world at all, if you look at a picture of a boat that's in the ocean, a ship of any kind, you'll see right at the waterline there is a totally different paint that goes from the waterline down to the bottom of the boat. This is an anti-fouling paint in the ocean. Basically, it's a paint, usually copper-based, that is made for the purposes of keeping barnacles from growing on it and the like. There is a lot that would grow on a ship in the ocean, and they make that it can play quite a havoc on the bottom of a boat, especially a fiberglass boat, but wood boats even more, because they get these worms in there, they decay it. So early mariners struggled with this idea of what we now call anti-fouling. And at some time, I think in the 18th century, in the late 18th century, they started using copper plating, copper sheathing over the bottom of the boat. And so now you see that a lot in shipwrecks of this, you know, large pieces of copper that were there for just that reason. But before they did that, what they used was this sort of pine tar. And in order to make the pine tar, they used to dig these big, I think the word we use is a kiln, like a big giant burning kiln where this tar and all these different things used to make it were burned and created into this thing that you can then basically swab onto the bottom of a boat. She is positing, or she is saying that what we're seeing here on Oak Island is this work being done. And the remnants of this work being done. She thinks that the flood tunnels, for instance, are a myth. They're not real. There is no flooding system. It's all natural, I think, or something like that. She thinks this was all done by a company in the 1720s. We're making it fit here, right? So it's not, I'm not saying this is a bad theory by any means. By a company called the South Sea Company. It was a slaver company. From then, a slave trading company. They were related with religious organizations too. This is very, again, this is very convoluted. I suggest you read the book to get all this. And she thinks that this sort of related religious organization is who built Nolan's Cross. She thinks that the 90-foot stone existed. And because she thinks that it is indeed translated to this simple cipher, even though other people have translated it as well, so the simple cipher that says 2 million pounds are buried, her feeling was that workers of the South Sea Company were bored and needed to do something, so they put this stone down there. I mean, there's a lot of holes in that. The long and short of it is, it's a compelling theory with a lot of corroborating evidence. But she's not the only person with a compelling theory with a lot of corroborating evidence. Go back and listen to my conversation I had with James McQuiston. This is a man who has a theory that is only just being completed now, that he did years of research for, and he has a ton of corroborating evidence. And I'm sure Joy Steele does as well. So it is an interesting theory. The criticism I hear is that it tends to ignore, and this is what happens with a lot of these theories, right? It tends to ignore some evidence, such as Smith's Cove. Was Smith's Cove built with a you know, coconut fiber and a man-made beach? I don't know that she addresses that specifically, so it's difficult really for me to say. I don't want to go too far with it. I'd recommend you read this. Book. I do plan on reading it this summer and doing a podcast basically on it. I have been waiting for this last book to come out, which is called, if I'm not mistaken, something like The Final Chapter, The Oak Island Mysteries Solved, The Final Chapter, or something like that. And it comes out. I'll get you all the information here. While we're on here, I'll just flip through my phone and tell you what it's all about. The Oak Island Mysteries Solved, The Final Chapter, comes out on paperback. It might be already available, but it's comes out on paperback on March 15th. So have a read and see what you think. It's an interesting idea. It makes a lot of sense. It tells us why there hasn't been anything of real value found. There's a lot of skeptics who buy this theory and who think this is the correct one. There seems to make a lot of sense, you know, in that. But I'm not sure yet, because let's read this final chapter and see what it has to say. Also, he writes, number two, again, love the podcast and the show. Just wanted to get your take on the wood dating subject as it has applied across numerous episodes and areas of the dig. In the most recent episode, hand-cut wood is found at a particular depth and is dated to 1600s. I understand and agree that this is significant if it can be confirmed to be the date of use or origin as building material. However, who's to say the wood couldn't have been old material sourced from an older forest outside the island, which does not accurately reflect its time of use? I assume the early searchers would procure wood for searcher tunneling outside the island, which could potentially be 50 to 100 years old, correct? Just looking for an explanation as to how there can be such confidence in dating reflecting the real-time use. That's a great, great question. There isn't any way to know that for sure. But if you think of the time period and how the work is being done in Oak Island, it really makes sense. The scenario that makes the most sense, right, is for logistical reasons, is that somebody, whoever was doing the work, came out to the island with tools, cut down the trees, and used the trees. Because there is no causeway. There is no way to get to the island other than by boat. Most likely, they're rowing that boat over because it's a short distance from the mainland. And my guess is these early folks, you know, early part of the 1800s, late part of the 1700s, are not doing that, are not rowing over logs, old wooden materials. They're, you know, that's just not how it was done back then. You're going to do a project, the wood is right there. It's all right around you. Go cut it down and use it. That makes the most sense to me. Am I completely sure? You can't be completely sure, but that is the most likely scenario. I don't see how people from that time frame would have loaded timbers on a barge and then rowed it over, because there's no motors, rowed it over to the island, to the opposite side of the island to be used. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me, Andrew. I mean, I hope that answers your question. There's no way to know for sure. It could absolutely be recycled, reused wood. I don't know. But the most likely scenario, at least in my mind, the most likely scenario is that it was chopped down and put right to use, which is basically what people did back then. And finally, our last question comes from Zach. He asks, why hasn't anyone ever thought that the wood they find could be from ships? Didn't they lather something on the wood to repel the water? Also, if there is a time gap in when the tree was cut and when it was used, would help explain that it came from a ship. Okay, so that's thank you for your time. Sincerely, new listener Zach from North Carolina. Zach, I wanted to put that one right there with Andrew's question because it does kind of go hand in hand. We talked already about what they used. They didn't use it to repel water. They had something on there to repel everything else. Yes, that could be found on there. I think the pine tar would degrade a lot quicker than the wood would, so I'm not sure there's a lot of information that can be gleaned from that hundreds of years later, dug out from underground. But yeah, there are some possibilities. More likely the scenario is, at least from what I can understand, and again, I'm not an archaeologist, I don't dig for these things. What I can understand is that they are finding those things in these ship spikes and in these little pieces of metal and stuff that are relating everything to maritime work. Does that make sense? But yes, to give Andrew's question, a reason why this could all be wood not used right away is because it came from a ship. So if you're taking or dismantling a ship, and then like you always hear about how somebody scuttled a ship or maybe dismantled it and then made the swamp out of that. If they actually dismantled the ship or used parts of it, you know, Fred Nolan pulled out a big long piece of a ship's plank, or a scuppers was Fred, I think. And then the Lagina team pulled out a big giant plank. If they're using that wood, yes, that would be a lot older. It could be hundreds of years. I mean, boats lasted for a long, long time, especially big galleons lasted for a long, long time. So that is possible. I have a hard time seeing how that really would be the best way to do it. Why would you dismantle a ship for use in a shaft of any kind when it's just as easy to tear down, to chop down a tree and then mill it? I mean, it's... I don't see how that works. I don't know of many times where somebody needed to build something out of wood. So what they did was take an old ship, dismantle it, and recycle the wood. Maybe I'm wrong. Email me and let me know if you think I'm wrong. But that just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. I think more likely scenario is that anything from a ship is there coincidentally, because of where we are. We're in Nova Scotia. There was a lot of maritime activity. You know, spikes come off. Things fall down. Spikes, cribbing spikes have different uses. They have uses on wharfs that might have been dismantled or destroyed in order to cover their tracks. There's a lot of scenarios here. But those are great questions, guys. Absolutely great questions. That's all for this episode of Digging Oak Island. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I rambled a little bit there, but I really get excited about all this. Thank you again for your questions. Especially thank you so much, all of you, for listening to the show and taking the time to talk, to send us your questions and talk about this stuff. I ask that you please rate and review us on iTunes, wherever you listen. My sincere thanks to everyone who's done so already. Thank you so much for taking the time to go on and rate and review us and for the kind words. It really keeps me going. And for some reason, it helps get the show out to more people. If you know anyone who's interested in the Oak Island Mystery, the Curse of Oak Island TV show, I please, share this podcast with them. See what they think. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We're at Digging Oak Island. And if you do have any other questions or comments, I like to do this in every show if I can, please send them directly to me. You can do so via email, digginoakisland@gmail.com. So until we speak again, I'm Dave McBride. Thank you for downloading and listening to Digging Oak Island.